This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Natural disasters are a threat to all of us, but there are other concerns too. We see across the world as citizens revolt and chaos ensues. What if that happened here? Would you and your family be ready? The preparedness movement is growing, advocating for self-reliance against potential disasters. So what does it mean to be prepared? Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss the preparedness movement are Omega Outdoor and Emergency Supply Company owner. He asked that we just use his first name. His name is Matt. Welcome, Matt.
How's it going?
The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Hour podcast host and authors of the Survival Medicine Handbook, Joseph Alton, MD, and Amy Alton. They're also known as Dr. Bones and Nurse Nancy. Welcome, Dr. Bones and Nurse Nancy.
Well, thank you very much. It's actually Nurse.
Nurse Amy. That's okay. It was close. Amy. Nurse Amy.
Close enough.
Well, speaking of preparedness, perhaps I could have been better prepared for the opening of this. So I apologize for that. Nurse Amy it is. So
yes.
Nurse Amy, my apologies for that.
No worries.
Our number is 513-419-7100. If you've got questions about how your family can better prepare, or if you want to tell us how you have prepared, it's 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or email us via Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets there and try to get some of those in the show as well. Matt, I want to start with you. Explain to us what Omega Outdoor and Emergency Supply Company is.
Well, we concentrate on static home preparedness, which would be, you know, your more plausible things that can and do happen. If anyone's been following the tornado damage that just happened up in Ohio, power outages, this type of thing, mainly the plausible thing. That's one of the problems with the preparedness movement in general. I think we kind of get a bad stigma. Everybody wants to jump straight to the zombie apocalypse, and that's really not what it's about.
Okay, so when people come in, what kind of questions do they have at your store?
Well, we get a variety of people through. In general, our clients are very well educated when it comes to preparedness, but we get the whole gamut. We get, and it's having the store has been good for me. It's really kind of broken the stigma that maybe myself even had a little bit about the type of people that do prepare. We have the entire gamut of the cross section of the American public, lawyers, doctors, even tradesmen, your general day worker, just, you know, realtors, everybody comes in, and they're all at different levels of their preparedness.
What kind of cost are we looking at? If I came in and had you guide me about how to make my way through a certain period of time, how much money should I expect to spend at your place?
Well, it depends on how prepared you want to be and for how long and how many people you're trying to prepare for. Anything, though, is better than nothing. And that's something that we'll hear from people from time to time. That's too expensive to prepare. That's not really true. Just a few extra dollars a week at the grocery store and canned goods, if that's all you can do, will make a big help. Within a month or two's time, you could easily have a 1 to 2 month preparedness pack of food.
Okay, let's move to Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy. You both have backgrounds in traditional medicine. I wonder how that field prepared you as experts in preparedness.
Well, actually, conventional medicine teaches you how to deal with issues when there is a functioning modern medical system. We concentrate on, in our writings and all of the education that we give, on situations where there is a disaster that happened, where you might wind up being the highest medical asset left as the average citizen. And so there are circumstances where you might be the end of the line in a disaster if medical personnel are overwhelmed, or if indeed the entire society has blown up. That's something that's very, very unlikely, of course, but there's nobody that writes in that particular mindset. So we decided to fill that niche, and we write for situations where help is not on the way.
And you've written multiple books, and one of them is called The Survival Medicine Handbook. What do readers find in that book?
Well, The Survival Medicine Handbook is otherwise known as The Guide to When Help is Not on the Way. And it's written in a very different mindset than standard first aid books, some of which are very, very good. It's based on this premise. Something happened that has removed modern medical care and facilities as an option, and assumes that somebody in the family has become, as I mentioned before, the highest medical asset left. And nowhere in the book does it tell you to go to the doctor or go to the hospital. Pretty unusual for a first aid book, simply because the entire book assumes, for all practical purposes, they no longer exist. And our mission is to, plain English, is to make the average citizen effective in the role of medic in circumstances where the ambulance is not heading in their direction, where the rescue helicopter is not on the horizon.
And that seems like it could be a variety of situations, such as a car crash on a rural road somewhere, in addition to some of the larger disasters that we alluded to early. So what type of circumstances are you talking about?
Well, there are so many different types of disasters that can occur. Just this weekend, Ohio and 31 other states were indeed in the midst of a deadly disaster where several people died as a result of a heat wave. We've been involved in a number of different diverse, I guess, disasters. As a young medical student, a tornado passed near our house, and it caused, I'll tell you, when that happens, it causes a sound like a freight train passing right in front of your nose. So we lost several houses.
Amy? Also, I wanted to say that, you know, it doesn't actually have to be even a disaster. It could just be where you live. You know, we think when we live near the city, like we do, that cell phone service is just always available no matter where you're driving. But I'll tell you, there are huge areas in this country where there may not be cell phone towers. And we've driven through some of those. And if you can't get a hold of somebody, but something happens, you run off the road, you have a car crash, your car runs out of gas, and then someone gets hurt trying to help you, this can be its own disaster. And it doesn't have to involve thousands and thousands of people. It could just be you personally. But if you can't contact medical personnel to come help you, that is your medical disaster.
And excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt, but I can speak directly to that. Up in Dayton, we just had those 15 tornadoes touch down, and I was kind of touring with the drone one of the disaster sites the very next morning. And frankly, I probably shouldn't have been out there, but in talking to some EMS buddies afterwards and then seeing how many trees were down on the road, they told me firsthand that they had to refuse medical calls to numerous people because the roads were just impassable.
You're absolutely right. If someone can't get to you, and we experienced this personally in South Florida in a hurricane that most people haven't heard of, Hurricane Andrew, when those trees were down, there's just no way they could get to you.
Exactly.
Okay, coming up later in this interview, we're going to talk about what people need to have in their own preparedness kits and maybe their medical kits. And I'm going to have you all evaluate the list that I put together of what would have been available in my home over the weekend. If I had to put a bag and something terrible had happened, I had to grab a bag and whatever worthy items I could throw in the bag. I'm going to read my list off to you, and then you're going to grade me, I guess, on my preparedness and give us the tips on how to better be prepared. And we'll get to that a little bit later on. And Matt, I'm curious, you mentioned tornadoes, and your store is in the Dayton area. What type of disasters do you think we should be most concerned about in this part of the world?
Well, look, and before I get to that, Mike, we should probably preface this entire conversation, and thank you for having it, by the way, with, look, the things we're discussing in preparedness often are things we don't want to be discussing, okay? They're not fun topics. They can get you down if you dwell on it too much. We need to learn to compartmentalize that feeling, move forward with the things that we can do, and that's all that we can do, okay? So when we discuss these things, don't take it as fear-mongering. You don't need to go cradle your bourbon and cry in the corner with your stack of canned goods. We can move forward like adults and address these problems. Now, what was the question? I'm sorry.
Well, it's interesting because this weekend I was cradling bourbon and crying in a corner, so I appreciate you reading my mind a little bit.
But we all do.
My question was, in this part of the world, as you referenced the tornadoes that took place in the Dayton area and caused some very significant damage and hurt there in that area, what disasters do you think this part of the world should be most concerned about?
Right. Well, as we just saw, the tornadoes, you know, I'm of the mind that we should be preparing for the most plausible things. Now, we can debate on how plausible one thing is from another. But, you know, this is what we're seeing. Like they had just mentioned previously, the power outages, there are power outages going on because of this heat wave. I believe New York City, parts of Brooklyn, if I read right this morning, are still 21,000 people without power. So this can be a minor inconvenience. Or when Hurricane Ike came through the Dayton area in 2008, maybe people remember that. There were people across the street from me where we live that were out of power for 16 days. That's a little bit more of an inconvenience, and tempers can even start to flare in that type of environment, and things can get a little hinky, people looking to steal generators, etc.
That's exactly what came to my mind as we were preparing for this segment, was Hurricane Ike's winds blowing through the Ohio Valley and knocking out power, and my family was without power for about 4 days, and we turned into complete savages. It didn't take long at all for us to turn on each other. It was quite scary, and I want to throw the same question to you, Joe and Amy. Weigh in on that. What do you think could happen that would lead us into the wilderness for the longest period of time, the most significant period of time?
Well, I think that there are a lot of different disasters that can occur in different parts of the country. It's a big country, and the answer is not the same for every part of it. In the West, of course, there is issues with earthquakes or massive wildfires. In the middle of the country, of course, you're right in the center of Tornado Alley. On our side here, we're in South Florida, where we are right at the moment, it would be hurricanes, flooding, things like that. So it really is different. Now, one thing I just want to tell your audience is that, yes, I'll admit that today, that tomorrow, next week, that you're very unlikely to be involved in some kind of disaster, but they do happen. Over the course of a lifetime, your chances of being affected by one isn't that small. And if you add in your children's lifetime, well, the chances aren't small at all. So that's why it's so important to instill a culture of preparedness, a culture of disaster preparedness, in my case, medical preparedness, in each generation. And if we could do that, there certainly would be lives saved.
I'm curious about, out of all these scenarios, and they most seem to be natural disasters, but what type of people outside of the items that we could collect or deploy during these situations, is there any certain type of person that is best equipped to adapt to this survivalist mentality, whether it be physical attributes or mental attributes? I'll start with you all, Joe and Amy.
I'm actually going to say somebody who's probably traveled the world a lot. If you've put yourself into situations that you don't necessarily can control everything around you, you're more apt to be adaptable. And that includes traveling to even just Europe. You know, it's just a different mindset. It's a different culture. If you put yourself into different cultures and in different environments, you're going to be more likely to adapt, because probably some issues came up. You had to figure out what to do. We had traveled once to Europe. We got stuck there from the Iceland volcano. We had to adapt and figure out where to go, how to get out of there, and what to do. This is somebody who probably can figure out what to do in situations. If you have only lived in your small town, you shop at the same grocery store, you have the same exact routine every single day, you're less likely, probably, to be able to adapt to strange things that are happening. The electricity not turning on, the water not coming out of the tap.
People that are involved with in a situation where they are not in what we call normalcy bias. Normalcy bias basically indicates that you expect each day to happen in a certain way because it always has. And when something changes, and let's say a car crash happened or some disaster happens, you know, you could wind up being paralyzed because it's just not what you're used to doing. So right. If somebody that's calm, somebody that can react positively to adversity,
right,
that's the kind of person that would be, in my situation, I think the ideal medic for a family or a group.
And just one thing, I did talk about travel real quick, but even just camping. You take your family camping, mm-hmm, and maybe you forgot the lighter and you guys got to figure out how to start a fire because you need to feed your children. And so you're like, oh, I remember from Boy Scouts how I can start fire without matches. So even something simple like that will help the family and yourself adapt to situations that you weren't planning.
And Matt, I want you to weigh in on that before we take our first break here. Is what type of person? Do you agree with their suggestion that people who are more familiar with disruptions to regular everyday life occurrences are probably better suited for this type of existence?
Yep, in good fashion, Amy covered one half and Joe covered the other half. The first thing that came to my mind was people that can deal with diversity. So if you want to generalize, you're looking at, maybe veterans, but then you move into into personalities, and then you're looking at, or hobbies, and you're looking at campers, hikers, maybe long distance runners, people that engage in martial arts, self-defense, this type of thing. People that, and then more importantly, that those people are great in the short term, but what about the long term? You know, you need to be a thinker as well, a problem solver. You need to know how to adapt and use things in your environment.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We're going to take a short break and come back and continue this in a moment, including a look at the list of things that I threw together over the weekend if I needed to flee my apartment and live outside for a little bit. We'll see how I did. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Being ready for the end of the world is about more than building underground bunkers. And the end of the world isn't all you should be paying attention to. Our conversation on the preparedness movement and what you need to know to be ready continues now. And we are joined today by Omega Outdoor and Emergency Supply Company owner. He asked that we just use his first name, and that is Matt. And then we also have the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Hour podcast host and authors of the Survival Medicine Handbook, Joseph Alton, MD, and Amy Alton. They're also known as Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy. 513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. We'll go to the phones now. We've got Ron on the line. Hi, Ron. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, that last comment regarding the persons who are most, adept to surviving situations, I definitely agree with the fact that a service person, hikers, people who have done the AT trail, and the fact that thinkers, to me, survival, water, food, shelter. I put survival is that what I'm talking about is a man against man. I don't know if that's going to be a situation, but I'm just talking about this, dealing with the mob mentality and then the surroundings. I mean, the people who live out in the country or people who live in the city. To me, I would tend to move away from the city and the potential for the danger in that kind of situation.
Okay, Ron, we do appreciate the call, and we do appreciate you weighing in on that. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation as well. Okay, so as we were preparing for this segment, I was told by the producers not to look in the folders that we keep with all the notes and the details on the guest, and to just spend the weekend giving a little bit of thought to what I would do in case of an emergency if I had to put together what you call a go bag or something along those lines. And so I put in my mind that I would have a certain amount of time to grab a bag and throw some things in it that I thought would help me survive for an unknown amount of time. So here's the first thing that I learned. I don't have a good bag for this kind of thing. I can tell you that right now. So that's the first thing I'd have to get.
Any backpack will work.
Well, say I don't have a backpack. And I realized this. I went hiking for the first time for a vacation I took over the July 4 holiday up in the Upper Peninsula, Lake Superior. And I didn't intend to go hiking. I thought I'd go kayaking, but I chickened out on the water. And I went hiking by myself instead. And I bought shoes and a stick, So I have those things. And I would take them. But the bag I had to use was just my usual shoulder strap satchel. So I would use a carry-on bag. So just picture that first of all, something that I could put over my shoulder, but it would not be comfortable. And inside this bag, the things that I thought I would need is one, I'd be wearing clothes, of course, but I'd have a change of clothes if I could fit them in there, just like a pant, a shirt, maybe a jacket, depending on the weather situation. The only food that I could take from my home in an emergency in this particular day, I had some beef sticks that I had bought on vacation in Upper Michigan. So I'd have those, and I had three containers of granola, and I have to have chewing gum. So I would have grabbed some of that in there. I had four large bottles of water in the fridge. I think that would have been helpful, but the bag is getting heavier at this point. I have some cash. I had $100 in 20s, and then I had $60 in quarters from when I didn't own my own washer and dryer. They're just still piled up in there from when I was using them at the laundromat. And then I try to grab like some soap, some toothbrush, toothpaste. I take some Advil. I have one weapon in the house. It's a large knife. I would take that, and I would probably try to take my phone and laptop, even if we didn't have power, just in case we did get that. And I'd take some paper and pens. So that's all I would have, guys. Matt, starting with you, tell me, how fast am I going to die?
Oh, well, water will probably be your first problem there. Back to the bag, though, I'd like to give people a tip, especially if you're, you know, you have some kind of physical ailment, or maybe you're a little bit older, you can't carry a lot of weight. A rolling suitcase like you would take to the airport is a great thing to have. A lot of times, if you're in the city especially, you might be walking on a sidewalk to go someplace.
I do have one of those, and I thought maybe that would be better.
Yeah, even on a well-marked trail, a rolling suitcase would be doable. Okay. You said beef sticks, so that's your food, that's your calories. That's not too heavy in beef jerky in the past. Our country's history, moving across large swaths of area, beef jerky was a big thing. So beef jerky's not bad. It's good calories. It doesn't weigh a lot. But weight becomes a consideration. So you're not going to pack your bag down with canned goods. That's probably the worst thing you could do. If it's the only food you have, fine, but you need to find another way to go there. And then water filter, of course, was the first thing that came to mind. You're going to need water first. Water first, food second.
Okay, very good tips. Let's go back to the phone lines, 513-419-7100. Angela's on the line. Hi, Angela. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for taking the call. My comment was in reference to having cash on hand. Going back to when Hurricane Ike came through the Ohio Valley area, ATMs were down, banks were closed because there's no power, and I'm not suggesting everyone go take out their life savings and bury it under the mattress, but to, in whatever box where you're going to have, you know, water and some of those food supplies, is maybe to have just a couple $100 in cash so that you can you know, have access to it if you need it.
Perfect suggestion, Angela. We appreciate it very much. Thanks so much for the call. We also have Mark on the line. Hi, Mark. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Yeah, I was kind of wondering what kind of disruption we should expect if there's another New Madrid earthquake.
Great question. We're thinking about putting a segment together on this, particularly in the wake of all of the quake activity in California. Mark, thanks for the call. Is this a question that comes up? We'll start with Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy on this one. Is there any questions that you field about people concerned about what may happen with the fault lines that we don't see a lot of movement from, but could cause major trouble once they start to rumble?
Right. Well, there'll of course be gas leaks. There'll be building fires. We saw that in the recent earthquake that occurred in Southern California. So these are things that can happen. So you have to be worried about burns, things like that. One thing, Michael, that you didn't mention that was in your backpack was a first aid kit.
Yeah, I don't have one. Good suggestion.
So absolutely, I think it's very, very important for even the casual hiker to have a first aid kit to deal with even minimal things like blisters, splinters, things like that. And these are part of things that we do is design kits just like this. So we have an entire line of kits like this dependent on your needs. Now, earthquakes, with regards to earthquakes and the New Madrid fault, if you look at the U.S. Geological Survey, I'm not seeing too much activity there. I see one or two at any one time. So I don't think that's the worst thing that can happen in that particular area, at least in the near future. It certainly would be the worst thing if it really actually acted up. But the main thing to do is just to be prepared to leave the house in between tremors. You don't want to leave during tremors because you may wind up falling downstairs, things like that, or things may wind up falling on you.
Okay. We've only got about 30 seconds left. I want to give each of you 15 seconds to tell us this. What do we do next? Matt, let's start with you. Tell us, where do we go to learn more?
Well, you can go to omegasurvivalsupply.com if you'd like. We're the only survival store in Dayton, so if you Google Dayton Survival Store.
And we can learn about classes that are being offered and all that stuff.
Classes are up there. I've got a lot of free writings and information that you can read for pretty much any scenario you could imagine.
All right, Matt, thanks for that. And Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, very quickly, where can we learn more?
Yes, I have an educational site, doomandbloom.net. There's also a store attached to it, store.doomandbloom.net, for first aid kits we design, and also our book, The Survival Medicine Handbook, on either our store or also on Amazon.
And we've got links to all that at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition link. We appreciate you listening to Cincinnati Edition today. I'm Michael Monks. Finally, we've got a break from the oppressive heat and humidity. What did the record streak of days over 87, along with the record rainfall, do to your garden and landscape? We've got half the summer left to go and a full hour of our monthly gardening show with experts and your phone calls and questions tomorrow at noon on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.